Listening Library presents Never Saw You Coming by Aaron Hahn. Read for you by Jessica Almacy and Michael Crouch, with a note read by the author. This is dedicated to all the church kids. No matter what you might have heard, I hope you carry only this. You deserve love, are worthy of love, and are commissioned to love. That's it. No caveats, conditions, or stipulations. You are loved just as you are.
Please be advised, this novel contains discussions of self-harm and suicide. August. 1. Meg. I was 4 the first time I accepted Jesus into my heart. I say first time because I did it at least 12 times before I turned 16. Better to be absolutely sure, you know? Like, what if I wasn't really feeling it the initial 11 times? Or maybe I was answering the wrong altar call? What if my heart wasn't prepared and I forgot to forgive someone who'd wronged me earlier in the day? Did those ones count? Who can be sure? We live in such conflicting times. Better to answer at every opportunity, just in case. Don't want to mess around when your eternal salvation is on the line. All of this is to say, I'm like super saved. Like, if there is a punch card for Gold Star Christians, mine's been well earned and is ready to be cashed in. There's this billboard on the way to my Nana Knudsen's in the middle of nowhere, Indiana, that reads, "If you died right now, do you know where you'd wake up?" And yeah, I know. I made sure of it. I'm nothing if not a planner. Hope for the best, plan for the rest. Salvation? Check. Eternity? Double check, times 6. My best friend, Veda, calls it my neurosis. That by confirming my salvation every 10 months, I'm basically negating the whole thing. If I can't trust it worked the first time, who am I dealing with here? Surely the creator of the universe can keep track of such things. I told her if she's not going to accept Jesus, I'll have to share half of my salvations with her, so she should be grateful. It's what I know. Salvation. It's the only certainty in my life. A week ago, that was okay with me. A week ago, I looked at my blank slate of a future and felt the giddy flip in my stomach that spoke of possibility and discovery. I was armed with my relentless faith and the proverbial bucketful of joy, ready to take on the world and answer the call. Unfortunately, just like my mom and dad, last week was a liar. So, it's my final night of youth group. That part was planned. It was always going to be my last time there. Only the circumstances have changed. The theater where we hold our weekly worship gatherings is dark, except for the stage lights, warm and glowing around my bandmates and me. I'll miss this. Singing with them and leading kids in praise music is such an honor. It's been years since I've performed my skating programs, and this isn't the same, but it's gratifying in its own way. I'm not a professional singer, but I'm not half bad when backed up by Jesus and my dear friend Ben's gorgeous violin. I move to the mic, my ever-present fairy wings fluttering comfortingly around my shoulders. I chose my simple white-as-snow feather wings today. They were the first pair I ever received, years ago, from my dad. I was little then. Still am, I suppose, judging by the way they fit. I was so tiny, he used to call me his sprite, and we would dance around the living room to his old My Chemical Romance albums. My dad. I shake off the memory, conjuring a beaming smile to my lips, praying the bright lights conceal the fact that it's fake. We have one more song tonight. I picked it special to share with you because I want you all to take care and take this to heart. And remember, Jesus and Meg Hennessy will always love you. I blow a quick kiss, spread my arms, and close my eyes, concentrating on the brush of softness at my shoulders. I press the hurt down and suck in a deep breath to soothe the ache. I'm singing Beautiful, Beautiful by Francesca Battistelli. It's joyful and painful at once. A girl crying out to her God, something I'm not sure I'm ready to do. It's not in me to dwell, so instead, I give the lyrics my best, impressing as much meaning and care into them as possible. In the song's final moments, I open my eyes, allowing them to adjust. I take the time to reach out with my gaze to the kids in front of me, and I will my love and prayers into them, that they might experience the consuming comfort of God's grace. May they never feel alone. May they never feel betrayed. May they never feel like this. The song ends, and the lights come on. It's over. Everything is over. I accept hugs and warm wishes for my future with my usual effervescence. Thank you. I love you. God bless. PTL. But for once, it tires me out. Apparently, being ungenuine is exhausting. I don't bother correcting anyone on the destination of my plans, and I don't share what's in my heart. Not even with Ben. I'll miss him and his ridiculous lumberjack beard the most out of all these kids. Pretending everything is okay around him makes my insides squirm, but I'm allowing this door to close, and I'm walking away. I'm turning over a new leaf, a new life. I really hope it works out for them in there, but I'm no longer sure it will. Not for any of us. The clock on the wall reads 7:30, and I'm regretting asking Veda to wait until sundown to pick me up. I was all in my feels and wanted to sneak out of my parents' two-story bungalow in Ann Arbor, Michigan, under the cloak of night. After all, I've never snuck out before. I've never disobeyed my parents, full stop, and felt I should do the thing properly. I imagined a dark house and my parents asleep in their separate beds. I would crack open my window, lifting it from its well-worn sill, and toss out a bunch of bedsheets tied end to end. I'd shimmy down to where Veda waited, her mom's car silent from being rolled in neutral down the street toward my window. I'd land with a soft thud in the dewy grass and not bother looking back as we pulled out of town, never to be heard from again. On our way, somewhere explicitly not here. But then my mom messed it all up with her caring. I'm finishing my packing, holding two pairs of fairy wings in my hands and trying to decide which to bring when she taps on my door. I told you, I say, petulant. I'm running away. Because, of course, I couldn't leave without telling them first. Always the good girl. Always courteous. I know, she says, sitting on my bed, her hands folded over a stack of something in her lap. I know, she repeats. I wanted to make sure you didn't forget anything. I straighten, tapping my chin with one finger. I wonder what that must be like, to forget something. Something so super life-altering and important for, I don't know, nearly 2 decades? I nail my mom with a look, daring her. Her expression narrows. She wants to say something, chastise my back talk, maybe, but she can't. She doesn't have a leg to stand on here. Instead, she swallows, her hands dancing along the object in her lap. Do you hate me? She asks softly, before shaking her head and refusing to meet my eyes. Oh, of course you do. I hate me a little bit. I have, for years. I consider this, dropping both sets of wings and flipping the lid of my suitcase over, zipping it closed. No, I don't hate you, but I hold up a hand in warning. I don't know how to feel right now. It's very jumbled. I gesture around my head. And I don't feel like I can properly sort it out here. I was leaving next week.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?